Hello everyone, welcome to the Cyber Weekly. The Cyber Weekly is a podcast which talks about cybersecurity with me, Deogratius Okello, and Josephine Olof, my co-host. Today we welcome Bob Henderson. Should we call you Bob or Robert? Which one do you prefer?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Should we call you Bob or
Bob,
Henderson?
Please, no, call me Bob. People call me sometimes Mr. Henderson. I go, please, I'm old enough. Don't call me Mr. Henderson. Bob. Bob is perfect.
So, yeah. So, Bob is our guest for today. But before we continue into the profile, Josephine, do you have anything to say?
Thank you, Dale. Just want to welcome Bob onto our podcast. Bob, it's a pleasure to have you. So, you're very welcome.
Yeah. Great to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Okay, so I'll quickly dive into Bob's profile. He studied his education at UCF College, where he did a bachelor's degree in finance. Then I went to New Jersey State Police Academy. Then when it comes to work, he started with the intelligence law enforcement, working for the government in New Jersey. Then general manager at AT&T, which is a telco communication company. Then Wesley Association, where he's the president, was the president and CEO. Then Mililo Consulting, hopefully I'm pronouncing it well, which was dealing with mission critical computing. Then president of RWH Group. Then InfraGrad member, then National Police Defense Foundation, where he actually part time since 2022. Then his company, Intelligence Service Group, which is a founder and CEO, which he started up in 2014 till now. So when it comes to volunteering, he has a rich history of volunteering. Among them being a Central Florida chapter for ISC2, then a United Way campaign, Heart of Florida, where he was the vice chairman in 1999, past president, Organization for Assistance to Sensory Impaired Students, then Primrose Center, where he is the past board member. Then there's Adult Day Center, Somerset County, then the University of Central Florida, where he's the mentor, CSNMP, where he's the member Central Florida chapter, then National Police Defense Foundation, where he's a delegate and he's still there. ISC2 New Jersey, which we've already talked about. Then National Police Defense Foundation. Not forgetting Cyversity, where he's also still a mentor. And that's where I got to know him from. So, Bob, you have a very rich history and you're still living. How have you been able to do that? Yeah,
people, if you look at my profile and people ask me, how did you go? And I'll start, I want to start kind of where way many years ago in New Jersey. I started out as an 18-year-old street cop in New Jersey, in the United States. And people kind of scratched their head a little bit. 18 years old, you became a street cop? Really? Is that possible? Back then, the law, legal age in the United States and most anywhere to do anything legally as an adult was 21. And that in terms of buying alcohol, in terms of entering into contracts and becoming a law enforcement officer, because the federal law for firearms to purchase and have and possess was 21. But the state of New Jersey, in their infinite wisdom, says, you know, if we can send 18-year-olds to war for the United States. They can certainly become law enforcement officers. They can drink alcohol. They can enter into contracts. And so they did that. They passed a law that you can become a police officer at 18 years old. So luckily, my best friend's dad happened to be chief of police, and he knew me. He knew me growing up, and that's what I wanted to do. And so they hired me, and I became the youngest police officer in the United States back then, and actually became a test case where New Jersey, I believe, was sued by the federal government. Says you can't do that because it requires him to have firearms and all that. And New Jersey says, yeah, we're going to do this. Go ahead and sue us. Well, that's why I became a test case. So eventually New Jersey won out, and that's how I started as an 18-year-old street cop. Now you're probably wondering, what would drive an 18-year-old, if you look at 18-year-olds today, totally different time back then, why would he want to become a cop or a police officer, right? Well, I had done an interview with the CISO of the NFL last year. He interviewed me on his podcast. And, you know, I don't share too much of my background and information simply because that's who I grew up, being a police officer in law enforcement, and eventually ended up doing intelligence in Washington. You just don't do that. You don't share information because that induces risk to you and your family. You just don't do that. But I did open up a little bit, and there were two incidents that happened in my life that have stuck with me and stuck with me today that really drove me to want to become a police officer. And I'll make it very quick. One of those, it's a little crass. My mother was working at a local pharmacy, and she was the victim of an armed robbery. Some guys came in with shotguns, they threw her to the floor, and they robbed the place, and luckily she escaped and wasn't harmed. Initially, as a teenager, that scares you, right? Your mother going through that. Well, I was scared. Eventually, I also got to the point where I got really mad. I go, how dare somebody do that, to go in to a pharmacy, a working person, and do that to anybody, let alone my mother. And the second incident also happened that left an impression on me. I had a neighbor that we grew up next to. It was a small town. And the neighbor had this young child, and she had a disease that everybody knew. It was a communicable disease, and they were trying to raise her. Well, one day, she was in a back pool by herself for whatever reason. She was drowning. And so they called the police, because back then there was no 911. You just called the police, and the police showed up. And the officer who showed up, he was a sergeant at the time, happened to be my best friend's dad. He showed up. And again, you got to remember, everybody knew that this little girl had this disease. It was a communicable disease. He did not hesitate, not even one second. He jumped in there and started giving her mouth to mouth, knowing what would happen because of this disease he had. But he did it anyway to save her life. He did, and luckily he didn't catch the disease. But those two things left such an impression on me. That says, you know, I want to be like that. I want to be that person that goes to the danger, you know, to help somebody who needs help. And I want to be that person that can do that. And have, so there was those two things that happened in my life that drove me when they changed the law to 18 to become a street cop. And I did. And those two things have stuck with me today. And Dio has heard this before about me, about service to people. You know, I have a mantra. I have a North Star that I follow, and our company follows in terms of our DNA. And if you look throughout my career, it has followed me in terms of law enforcement, intelligence, and a volunteer opportunity. And that saying is very simple. What we do for ourselves dies with us. What we do for others and the world remains and is immortal. That left off an impression on me that that's what I want to be, and that's how I want to live my life. No matter what I do along the way, I want to be able to help people along the way. And they remember that. And if I can do that along the way, I'm going to do it. And that's the DNA of me. That's the DNA of the people that are on my team. And that's the DNA of our company. So that's kind of how I started and how I developed my mindset in terms of service to people. So that's where it started.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you for that, Bob. And glad your mom was okay. And it's so admirable that you are able to be, you know, at 18 years old. Not many people at 18 years old have that mindset to say, I'm going to be a cop. You know, it's, you know, especially this in this day and age. So thank you very much for sharing that. So you, yeah.
It's still, I get a little feeling emotional sometimes when I reflect back to that, because it's still in me and it will never leave me.
So you did get into cybersecurity. What are those skills that you got in law enforcement? Are you finding really useful in
You
these
know, my
days?
path, yeah, and that's a good question, because my path, I did all that stuff in law enforcement. Then I went to Washington, did stuff there. And if you look at my profile, the kind of things I was doing, newspapers were writing editorials about the things I was doing. I posted one of those editorials on my LinkedIn profile, right? So the things I was doing was great. It was fascinating. It was interesting. And the way I explain to people is, you would go and pay a ticket to go see a movie about the stuff I was doing in real life. So it was great. I was making a difference, and we were battling global cartels face to face and infiltrating and doing all that stuff, gathering intelligence. But you know what? Eventually, as I saw some, I didn't go to college yet. I had no college. My peers and people I grew up with, they go to college and they eventually got into these jobs and companies. They were making good money. And although what I was doing, I had a mission, there was a purpose, but you just didn't make any money. And I said, eventually, what was happening is, we were using technology back then to do intelligence. We were doing, human intelligence, signal intelligence. We were at the end, we started doing a lot of intelligence gathering around. We're using microwave signals, and I don't want to get into all those type of things, right? But it also is, that's when computers were coming in. And it was fascinated by that, and I wanted to learn more about it. And one of my friends was at AT&T, and it was when AT&T was had to, by government decree, break up into three separate companies. They were a monopoly. So it allowed them to start a separate company to get into the computer business, which they were never allowed to do before. Make their own computers, which they didn't. They were made by, I think it was Olivetti over in Italy, but they were making his computers, allowing them to get into the computer business. But they had to start a whole new company with about 30,000 people that broke off from AT&T. So they were hiring like crazy. I went, took the test, got in, and said, this is great. I can learn about computers and technology and data centers and networks. And I remember starting there. And I had to learn. What did I know? I knew nothing about networks and computers. And they started talking about like modems. I had no idea what a modem was. I thought it was another street name for cocaine or methamphetamine. What did I know? I had no idea what a modem was. So I learned. I learned a lot, and I learned really quickly. In over a 5-year span, I was promoted 5 levels and eventually became head of the general manager, head of their network engineering and design organization internally for AT&T for North America. And that led us to developing a new technology as technology evolved to where we can, people using the systems. Back then, it was called a 3270 dumb terminal. You had a black and white or green, green characters. And you can access one application. There was no GUI. It was pretty rudimentary. But you've developed a technology that now introduced virtualization, where the users of those systems can now interact with four different applications at the same time on their screen, which now is nothing. But back then it was new, it was unheard of. So this division called AT&T Information System developed this new technology called XNA, Extended Network Architecture. So it allowed for that virtualization, but you can imagine the introduction of risk that introduced. Right. So we had to develop not only the technology networks, redo data centers, put in cyber security. How do you keep that secure? So my team did all that. And we did it, and they deployed it, and they deployed it months ahead of time. And so years later, when AT&T was now allowed to go back to becoming one company, they had to take, I think it was maybe a couple hundred thousand people, put it back together. So you had 30-some major data centers scattered throughout the United States. All these people, all these different mainframes and systems and networks, how are you going to do that? So the company decided that they had to use this XNA architecture. That was the only way to do it. So I wrote the business case to do that, to bring it all back together, and wrote it, and then had to go to New York to present it to AT&T and board of directors. And what they did, they adopted it and said, yes, in order to bring AT&T back, one company, we have to use this architecture and design. I think back then it was about a $40 million project, which in today's numbers, it's probably extraordinary undertaking. So wrote it, presented it, and then, by the way, Henderson, you're doing it. I go, okay. So I had responsibility for managing that and brought together, I had like, I don't know, 30, 40 direct reports, and I had matrix management to me, everybody from throughout North America, a few hundred people for data centers and all that. So our team had to undertake that challenge. We had, I think it was 3 years to do it or something like that, or maybe 2 years. We had to do it and complete it in 2 years. Our team, and I say the team, because I was just happened to be head of it, but it's the team that did the work. They were extraordinary, and they completed it, I think it was 18 months. And under budget, it was an incredible undertaking. So that's kind of where I got into technology and computers and started understanding more about cyber and started really getting into, we were doing some forensics toward the end of my career in law enforcement intelligence. There was no such thing as digital forensics. It was computer forensics, a little different, because computers were just coming on. But I wanted to learn more. I wanted to keep going. So I wanted to make money. And I also realized when I was at AT&T, man, we had to hire a lot of consultants to do this project. You can imagine the impact it had. We had to do this across North America. And we had limited a number of personnel. So we had to bring in partners, right, and consulting firms. And I started realizing, man, they're charging a lot of money for this. This is crazy. So I could do this. So I eventually decided to take a risk and leave AT&T. And that's where I started. I think you referenced it, you know, Wesley Associates. And that was my first company. And guess who my first client was? AT&T.
AT&T.
Because now there was the next evolution of technology. Now we're in the client server technology, right? Well, who best to transition them from where they were, this XNA, to client server, than the person that headed it up. So that was my first client for that company. And we had others, big clients in the Florida area, because that's where it was headquartered. Eventually had an opportunity, came along, where I was offered to sell the company, and I did. So I had a non-compete for a while. Did some consulting work. I was coming back to Jersey. People had reached out for me and did some consulting work and did another small company. Got sold that for not as much money as the other one. And then still had a non-compete for a couple of years and did more consulting work and kept my hands on what was going on with the industry and cybersecurity and technology and emerging and growth of data centers and all that and networks. So eventually, about 10 years ago, a bunch of us that have the same background experience in DNA that I have, we go, you know, people and companies don't realize who they're being attacked by. It's no longer kids in the basement, although that still happens. It is nation states and it is global cartels and global crime syndicates that are getting into attacking companies through cyber. And back then, cybersecurity was a field that was really relegated to the IT staff, right, in companies, IT people. And we start scratching our heads. We go, well, what do they know about fighting criminals at a global level, global cartels and nation states? Where we did it. We did it face to face. And I won't go into some of the stories, but we did it. And I said, you know, we have unique DNA. We all of us have that experience in law enforcement intelligence and battling those criminals, but we also have the technology piece of that DNA as well. So we decided to put those together and go to market. And we started a company, it's 9 years, it's going into 10 years now, based around forensics, digital forensics, gathering intelligence and investigations to help companies battle those threats, both internal and external. We took it to market and we started growing. And as we continue to grow, we started seeing gaps in security controls within the companies we're in. And the companies are companies. We don't collect their logos and put them on our website. We just won't do that. A lot of companies do that. We're not going to do that. But those are companies you would know. They're using the Fortune 100 companies. You'd be surprised who our clients are. And we continue to do that. And we continue to grow. And eventually we would expand into other areas as our clients' needs grew. We had to stay ahead of the curve. And we're doing that today. We're staying ahead of the curve. We're doing a lot with AI and bot security. And we've adjusted our portfolio to get away from things like EDR and all that on the perimeters. There's more of a challenge now with security threats in the market that we're addressing. So that's kind of where we are and how we grew the company. But all of us, that DNA and those stories I tell you have never left us. That is our purpose and our mission. We want to go to companies and help them solve those problems and address those threats because of our DNA. So the DNA will never leave us. Our purpose, it will never leave us. It's not just to help individuals, it's to help companies. And the volunteering part, I have an obligation to do that, personal obligation. A lot of us do that. You know, we've been successful, but I just don't want to be successful. I want to be and have significance in what I'm doing as for the short time that we're here. So it's more about being significant in people's lives. And if I can do that, and I hope Dio has seen some of that, that's why I'm involved with these nonprofits and Cyversity, and I'll continue to do that. So that's kind of short version of my journey, how I think, how our companies think, my mindset, and why we're doing what we do. Hope that helps.
Yes, that helps. I have a confession to make. When I was beginning up with Cyversity, my mentor wasn't fully available. So every Friday, even up to now, every cohort, they usually have Bob every Friday around the same time. So from 7 onwards, that is East African time. But yeah, we had Bob. And most of the times when you talk to Bob and you have an idea, all you have to do is like, why aren't you doing it? Get on it. So yeah. So when I told him about bosses, like, go on. So yeah, Bob is one of the people who inspired me to actually start the podcast.
Yeah, speaking of coffee chats, you know, I have one tomorrow. You know, my guest is going to be in a coffee chat, right?
I'm not sure. You
know, my guest is going to be the CISO of the National Football League tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, Tomas will be my guest because this session of the coffee chats, I started to bring in guests from different areas and diversity of guests so the mentees can hear right from them and can ask questions. So Tomas will be there tomorrow on my coffee chat. How many times you get to speak to the CISO of the NFL, right? So
yeah, that sounds,
Hopefully I give you a little insight. And yeah, I think you asked me what things that I learned and experienced that I have from what I was doing that I use now and translate into cyber. And let me share a little bit about that. And Dio's heard this before. did technical expertise and the certifications to get a cyber or necessary foundations that you need to have a body of knowledge, right? You should have that. You need to get into cyber. But what I think people don't put enough emphasis on is human skills. I don't like the term soft skills. It's not relevant. It's human skills. And those skills require curiosity. They require communications. They require empathy. And let me tell you one or two stories. I learned those things a long time ago, why they're important. And one of the stories is, years ago, again, I was a street cop. It was a rough time in the United States. There was a lot of civil unrest or whatever. And one of those things happened in a local dive bar, and a riot broke out. And of course, you go there to quell the riot, and it's chaos, right? You're trying to get things under control. And during that chaos and those struggles, I remember this very vividly, and it just stuck with me. And this is one of those things, one of those incidents that led me to understand the importance of building relationships and being nice to people no matter where they are in their station in life. I was battling, trying to arrest some of these people, and had my back turned. And there was an individual just getting ready to hit me in the head with a whiskey bottle, right? The bartender, she was a bartender, and you can imagine, you know, she wasn't the best of person in the community. She had some struggles, and I have encountered her before when she was down and out and had to arrest her sometimes, but I always treated her as a person and showed empathy. She ended up hitting that guy in the head he was about to stab me in the back, and she hit him in the head with a whiskey bottle so he couldn't stab me in the back, right? And oh my gosh, he saved my life. Now, I had a vest on. I'm not sure how much damage he would have done, but the point is, she remembered and she protected me. And I'll never forget that. And that showed me the importance of building relationships with people across the spectrum of the humanity. You have to, and you got to show them empathy and the importance of that. Another incident that happened, it's a little more, I'll leave out the bad parts. I was a detective. I was only on the street for 2 years till I got promoted to detective at 20 years old, believe it or not. And I remember there was a case, this young couple were separated and they had two little children. And the weekend, it was the father's visitation in another town. And I got called in or whatever, and something bad happened where I had to go tell the mother, a complete stranger, mind you, I had to go tell her, you're never going to see your children again. They're not coming back. If you don't have empathy at that moment, if you haven't learned empathy at that moment to be able to go do that, to tell a young mother, a complete stranger, and she was probably older than me, right? And here I am telling her, your children aren't coming back. You're never going to see them again. I mean, that instilled to this day a chill in me, that having to do that. And so those are a couple of the lessons I learned a long time ago, why those human skills are so important in life. And what we do today, it may not be as drastic, but it certainly has an impact on the people that we're dealing with and across the spectrum. And you have to have those skills to be successful and to be significant. And so those are a couple of things that happened to me that I learned a long time ago. So,
yeah. And the human skills just cut across, don't they?
Yeah, I hate the term soft skills. Soft skills is irrelevant. It's human skills. Because you deal with humans, right? You deal with people.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you for sharing that, Adil.
Okay. We have continued to support law enforcement through the National Defense Police Defense Foundation. What do you consider your impact there?
Yeah, I actually got elected. I'm on the board of directors now. for that organization, and I'm also the treasurer, the finance guy, maybe because of my degree in finance, running business. But I got involved with them years and years ago. They started the organization many years ago by a former United States federal agent who was wrongly arrested and was targeted for revenge. I think it was out of New York, because he had the audacity to go charge, I think it was for drug running or whatever, certain individuals that had political connections, right? So he was targeted and wrongly arrested and charged. And he went through that. Eventually, he was pardoned a number of years ago by the president, because they knew those charges were false. But he suffered a lot. And he had started this organization to support law enforcement, not just in the United States, but actually he's global. This organization is global now, to support those law enforcement officers and first responders that are targeted, right? That are targeted. Now, I know there's controversy about bad law enforcement officers. There's bad, every profession has bad apples, right? I get that. But overall, I got involved in there because when I started the company, I said, we do intelligence services. And through contacts, we were called in because there was a sitting chief of police that was targeted by a corrupt prosecutor for a personal vendetta, right? And that was in, I think it was New Jersey. And we got called in to gather intelligence and investigation on his case, because quite honestly, I knew the people. I know how they operate, right? And I know what to look for. So they called us and said, there's a lot of bad things that went on here, and we have to get the evidence to show what happened. And we did. We found a lot of illegal electronic evidence, all these things, and witnesses. Anyway, eventually, we helped them where that case was totally dismissed against the chief. It was thrown out of court because of the intelligence and everything. We found the evidence we found. So that's kind of how we got involved with them. And it really struck me again at my DNA, my purpose of helping people that are in trouble, that need help and don't know where else to turn. And that's how I got involved with them. So over the years, continued to help them in different cases, and eventually became a delegate. And now I sit on the board. And one of the best things that I have had there, experience I've had, is probably one of the better things I've ever had happen to me, is in December of last year. The foundation, again, is now a global foundation. They have members from countries in South America and Europe. And actually, the founder was recognized by the Pope a few years ago for his work and helping across the globe. Back in December, I had the honor of going to the embassy in Washington, the Israel embassy in Washington, and presenting to them, and the head of the chief of police, Israel Defense Forces, came over and presenting to them an appreciation plaque or whatever in support for the National Police Defense Foundation to the Israel Defense Forces and those police officers that were attacked on October 7th. And they had a couple of those officers and IDF members there at the embassy that we met, and I heard their stories of what happened and how they were under attack and what they had to go through because of the terrorists. And it was amazing for me to meet those people. And so I was honored to do that. So that's why I continue to be involved with them and will continue and to support them. And that's how I got involved.
So it sounds like you make an incredible impact there, Bob.
I don't know. I hope so. I hope so.
But it's global, so I guess, yeah, that's fantastic. So I know you've already talked about your company, ISG. I was reading about it, and it says you have no sales force.
No.
And there's no FUD. And I was curious, why did you adopt this model, and what does FUD stand for? What is that?
In our industry, especially in technology and cybersecurity, I see it all the time, and I just, FUD is people a lot sell. How do they sell the clients, or how do they get their messages out? They use fear, uncertainty, and doubt. That's called FUD. And that's how they market their technology. It's through fear. If you don't buy this, this bad thing's going to happen, or uncertainty, or doubt. And that's what they drive it. So we don't do that. We just stay away. And that's what FUD means, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And you'll see a lot of that, especially in the cybersecurity industry now. It's so prevalent. And we decided years ago, we start, you know, I'm not a, I don't dislike salespeople, but I've seen so many bad things that salespeople do and how they treat their clients and customers and prospects. And I said, we're not going to do that. We're just not. If you talk to us and we can't form a relationship with you based on our purpose, who we are, and build a trust, then we're not going to do business, right? We're just not. So all of us have the same mindset. We're going to build relationships. We spend a lot of time understanding your business, right? It's not just fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but we want to understand your business. And our motto is we try to become a scholar of your business. So we understand the threat you're facing. We understand the problem. And if we have a solution to help you, we want to understand how that solution is going to impact your business, because that's how, especially in cybersecurity today, the CISOs or whatever are business people. They're aligned with the business, they're aligned with the board, or they're getting there, and not used to be, but there's a migration toward that mindset. And if you can't align a solution to their threats and their risk to what the business is facing, then you're wasting your time. You're not helping them. So we spend a lot of time, again, trying to become scholars of the business, understand why is this particular threat a threat to you? What's the impact to your business, whether it's revenue, mostly revenue stream, right? Is it impacting your reputation? All those things. And how's that going to impact your business? So we do a lot of that. We spend a lot of time doing that. And it's not something that I have seen in my years salespeople do, right? They have business development reps that are out trying to get meetings. Oh, get a meeting with us, we'll give you an iWatch. That was the latest one I saw. Somebody was saying, well, if you meet with us, we'll give you an Apple Watch. Well, they got a lot of meetings, gave away a lot of watches, couldn't even get any business. So where's the value in that? How is that building relationships? So no, we don't have salespeople. Maybe someday, I don't know. But I think we do fine with myself, our executive team, and the individual contributors on the team that go out and do these projects and meet with the people. They have the same mindset. We just want to understand how we can help. But if we can't, we're going to tell you we can't help. So we just
that sounds great.
Yeah, it's interesting because as we evolved, we have to bring in technology partners. You can't do any of this without technology. Let's be honest, you can't. Now, we adjust that portfolio as technology changes, like we did recently around bot security and AI and threat intelligence. That has become huge for us in helping solve our clients' problems. There are partners we fired. We got rid of because of their behaviors. We just wouldn't do it. So, no, you're not going to treat our clients like that. And we call them clients because when they come with us, they usually stay with us. They're not a one-time customer. They usually stay with us for years.
It's very refreshing to hear that you actually, there's so many times you buy technology solutions which just do not talk to what your requirement is. And then you end up getting stuck with something that's expensive, you can't really use. So that's really refreshing to hear.
Yeah, and they don't understand. It's not just the impact. It's the impact on the organization. Do you have the skill sets to support this technology? What is the impact to the other groups within your or other business units within your organization that may have to get involved in supporting this technology? You know, one thing now that we're focused on is around bot mitigation, right? Because of the advancement of AI. Well, bot mitigation is not just the cybersecurity team. It impacts the e-commerce people. It impacts the marketing team, right? So it's across the spectrum. You have to understand that. You have to know that you're not putting these solutions in a vacuum just to cybersecurity team. It's a broader spectrum across the business that's going to impact. So you have to understand that. Yeah, we can do this, but are you prepared for the impact to the other units in your business? Because it's going to impact them. Now, have you thought about that? And that's how we look at it.
Yeah. Great. So now when it comes to, you've created three successful enterprises, business enterprises. And what challenges have you found while, and how have you faced those challenges while creating these companies? And what advice do you give to other founders to when it comes to creating an organization?
Yeah, one of the things is, you know, it's not easy. It's, you know, I was doing mentoring for University of Central Florida University, where I'm an alumni from the business school for finance deal, like you said. And I was a mentor there in the business school for a while. And when I became mentor, they always, and they have a program for an entrepreneurship. So they said, how about being a mentor in our entrepreneurship program? Because you started some companies and sold them and you got another one. I go, yeah, I can do that. And the students were interested. They had the same question. What do we do? How do we, you know, I want to start a company. The first thing I told them is nobody cares, right? Nobody cares about your company. I hate to tell you, you have a great idea. It's all good, but nobody cares. So what you have to do is you have to find a way to make them care about what you do. You need to find that message. And that message isn't just selling stuff. That message, you need to understand, why would they care about you? Why is that important? And what makes you different than anybody else, especially what we do? We're a smaller company, but we have hundreds and hundreds of competitors. But we also realized over time, a lot of those big competitors, when it comes head to head, we usually beat them. And I don't think about them. I know who they are, but I don't care. I just focus on what we do. But that's what the first thing I tell people is, you may care about your business. You may have some family members that gave you some money to invest in your business, but nobody cares. So you have to first develop that message and that platform and make people care about what you do, what you're offering. If you can't do that, you're not going to get anywhere. You're just not. It's not easy. You're going to fail. And the other side I tell them is you better have patience, right? You got to have patience. It's not going to happen overnight. If it does, you're lucky. Lucky. You need to have patience and build relationships. It's about the building of the relationships and understanding what you offer, why it's important to the business. You know, we have a North Star that we are driven by, and Dio knows what it is, and you've seen it. And it's actually, if I actually said that quote earlier, that's our North Star. So I would encourage you, if you're going to start a business, they talk about passion. Passion is good. You got to have passion, but you better have purpose. You really should have a purpose to why you're doing this. And even when I mentor, and Dio knows this, I always ask him, well, why do you want to get into cybersecurity? Tell me why. Why? What drives you? What's your purpose? Well, it's no different than with business. If you want to start a company, whatever that purpose is, you better define it. And then go execute. You have to execute. And one of the things I tell people, even today, if you make it complex, complexity is the enemy of execution. Don't make it complex, right? Don't make it complex for people to deal with you. Don't make it complex to get your message out there. Don't make it complex to sell something if that's what, just don't. Keep things simple as you can. Don't make it complex, because complex is the enemy of execution and you have to go execute. So That's what I tell them.
Yeah. So you are an entrepreneur mentor. Is it entrepreneurship mentor? Yeah.
Yeah. University of Central. I didn't do it this semester. I've been too busy with other ones, other areas. So
yeah.
But they keep coming back to me. So I will do it again because I loved it. It's a, you know, it's different than doing like Syversity or mentoring like ISC2. I was doing mentoring for their program as well in New Jersey for a while, but it's a different mentorship and I love it. So I'll get back to it.
Okay. That's great. So you obviously have a lot of experience supporting your clients through all their different challenges, the cyber challenges. You've had a client where you have who had a DDoS attack on a mission critical systems, etc. What has stood out for you in some of those incidents that you've come across, and also what are the biggest weaknesses you find when you deal with clients that you can't talk about?
Yeah. One of the biggest challenges is when you communicate with the people, and I'll give you an example of one of those. I won't mention, there was a client, a big Gummer contractor, and they had an incident where they thought they had a breach of 500,000 documents, an actual breach and all that. And they had a MSSP working with them. That's a managed security service provider. And going through this, our team came in and we started finding these things and doing the forensics and doing all that. It turns out this MSSP wasn't vetted very. They really didn't understand what we were doing and understood the importance of doing this. And what really was a breach wasn't a breach. It wasn't. It was a standard operating procedure of these, I think it was like 500,000 files. And that was in the course of business, it was standard what they do between, they had so many offices throughout the country, sharing this stuff throughout the offices. And I go, the MSSP should have known how you do business. They should have known your business. Instead of just all of a sudden they see this and raising a red flag, because that red flag kicked off not only concerns about the risk to the business, it also may have put them in a legal complication because, oh, we have to go now and let the state know there was a breach. I go, whoa, wait a minute. You don't know that that happened. And the minute you do that, the minute you follow the law about alerts on breaches, the minute you say something, and then find out later it wasn't, you're in bad shape. So they didn't know. They didn't understand. Their outsourcer didn't understand their business model. And you know, the gist of it was, you need to do a better vetting if you're going to have somebody come in, an outsourcer, and manage your security for you. And they just didn't do it. They didn't do a good job of vetting it because it could have created havoc for them of what they thought was a breach wasn't a breach. And luckily, you know, we found it in time and said, there's no breach here. This is what happened. You weren't attacked. But they were all ready to get their counsel to do an announcement. I go, whoa, no, don't do that. You have 24 hours, I think it was 48 hours, where the state they were in. I go, no. And we actually brought an outside counsel that we work with that specializes in these things throughout the country, and they're well known for it. I said, your counsel inside knows nothing about cybersecurity and the law in terms of privacy and breaches. They don't. So we brought someone out and it does this for a living on the outside. Told them the same thing. No, don't say anything yet because you don't know what happened. You're not obligated to. So that was the one thing that we ran into where it was interesting that they didn't vet their outsourcer very well. They didn't really understand their business. They would just say, we got a contract and we'll do this for you. Yeah, but do you understand the business? And they didn't. Another incident where there was online gaming, And they had a huge DDoS attack, and nothing could be done in terms of transactions, nothing. And their team just didn't know what to do. They couldn't figure it out. Again, in that particular case, we did. We were able to remediate it, able to find where it came out of China. But that's where it ended. We put some remediation in and stopped it and did all that. But again, the skill set wasn't there. So that's one of the things we find is the skill set of the people that are doing, it's gotten better. A lot of bigger companies, we see it better, but it still exists. You have certain tools that you brought, which I alluded to early in our conversation, but do you have the skill set to run and manage those tools to get the best out of it, to get the return on your investment? And that's where I think we see a lot of that is a gap, especially now with AI and the emergence of other cyber threats now because of AI. That's where I think a big gap is, helping people with those skill sets and understanding the impact now. The technology landscape has changed quite a bit. And being able to understand what it means and how it's going to be a threat to your business. And you see it every day. You see it every single day. More and more aggressive ransomware attacks and breaches and attacks across the board. And you go, how could that be? Got to keep up with the technology and what the threat actors are doing. Because they're doing it. They are certainly doing it. Their skill sets continue. But what about yours? Yeah. So I think that's where the biggest gap is.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Definitely sure. The threat actors are way ahead, I think.
Yeah, they're way ahead. They're going to continue to be way ahead. And I tell people, I said, what do you think the biggest difference is between the criminals? And by the way, they're criminals. They're not bad actors. They're not black. They're criminals. That's what they are. Okay, and we call them that, they're criminals. What do you think the difference is between them and you or any of us in this industry? There's one big difference and one advantage they have, which we will never have or we shouldn't have. You know what that is?
Passion.
That's a question. They have one advantage that as protectors and guardians, and we are protectors and guardians. I saw a CISO post something on LinkedIn a while back. We're not guardians. Yeah, you are. You're guardians. You're not a hero. You're a guardian and protector. But what is the one advantage that criminals have that we don't have or we don't use? We should never use. Sometimes it happens, but we don't. You know what it is? They don't have to follow the rules. They don't. We have to follow the rules. So we have to combat those threats within a framework of rules we have to follow. And that's how it should be. So that requires creativity. That requires a different skill set, right, to be able to do that, which the criminals don't have to follow the rules. They can do whatever they want. And they're doing it. They're absolutely doing it. So that's the main difference, how I see it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob, we've talked about your North Star. One of the key things I would like to ask is how do you maintain it and ensuring that your clients comply with your North Star and plus the people you're bringing on board to work with you maintain it?
Yeah, our team, you know, I've met a lot of people over the past 2 years that are getting, especially around digital forensics or whatever, and in fact, former law enforcement, and I'm glad to see that, by the way. And you know, others say, well, what about coming to work for you and doing it? I say, yeah, but you could do that. But we have a unique skill set that we require. We require, because of what we do, certain high-level experiences what most people just don't have in terms of government work, in terms of what they were doing in specific entities, whether it's Interpol, whether it's FBI, Secret Service, Justice Department. There are certain things, and it's just because of who we are and our mindset that we think works, that you have to have that. And usually those people we find through networks and relationships. So in terms of working for us, you very rarely will you see us post a job ad out there or whatever. We're just not going to do that. We have ways of vetting those people we want, and we'll continue to use that way through networking and relationship, because we have a unique skill set they require and a mindset that they have to have. I hope that answered your question internally for what we do internally.
Yes. So what led to you joining Cybercity as a mentor?
I'm sorry to hear that.
What led to you joining Cybercity as a mentor?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. You know, a few years ago, you know, I had a lot of contacts and CISOs, and I was doing my own podcast a while back, A Day in the Life of a CISO, right? We were doing those on a weekly basis, and CISOs would come on. And one of those was Olivia Rose, and you know Olivia, right? So her and I became friends, and we communicated and doing some things together. And eventually, she says, Bob, you really ought to get involved in Cybercity. So I looked into it, and I go, you know, their purpose really aligned with our DNA and what I wanted to do. So it made sense to me, and that's how I got involved. I first met her. She pulled me into it and started meeting more people, and I understand their purpose and what they're doing in terms of the underrepresented, diverse community that needs mentors and that needs people to help them. And that's why I got involved in it. And I think after the first session, you know, I tend to look at things differently. As you know, Dio, I say things differently you may not hear from other people. He says, how about doing a coffee chat, a weekly one? I go, I don't know if anyone's interested in it. And I did it. And that took off. People are interested. And here we are, still doing them, still involved. And I meet just great people, great mentees like yourself, Dio, that I'm encouraged by the industry to see that and see people like you come into it. So that's how I got involved, and I'll continue to do that.
Yeah, this question is Dale's question. I don't know, Avery Vaughn. She's your mentee, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was my mentee, yeah.
Okay, so what stands out about individuals like Avery who've made it in cybersecurity? What stands out?
Yeah. You know, and I tell this to every mentee, and I just went through this. I had another former law enforcement officer come to me, was introduced to me through Cybercity. He was law enforcement officer Turks Caicos, right? He's now in the United States. He has degrees in digital forensics. He was doing digital forensics and all that, and he's trying to get into, you know, a broader domain in cybersecurity in his journey. And he goes, what do I got to do? And gave him some pointers and some advice where he should go, what organizations you should get involved in. But I asked him the same thing I asked every mentee. Why do you want to do this? And Avery, I asked her the same thing. I go, you're a school teacher. You're a school teacher. Why do you want to get into cybersecurity? And she told me her story. And I was blown away by her story of why she wanted to get into cyber. And she published it. And I would encourage, I told her, you need to write up the story and publish it. And she did. And it led to other things. And she got a job within 6 months. They offered a position in for a cybersecurity company. And her story was quite unique. I think everyone's is. And her story was, she was a school teacher, and I'll tell you a little bit about it, but you should go read it. And she knew there was one student of hers, she had suspicion, was involved in trafficking, child trafficking, right? And she didn't really understand what was required to take that information to the authorities where they would get involved. So what she did on her own time and through her own diligence went out and did through OSINT and all that, how can I help this child? What's going on? And found certain things and evidence and turned that over to the authorities, and they eventually got involved and saved that child. But it was that story and her tenacity and wanting to know how to help this child because no one would listen, that it worked. it was, that is what drove her. Says, man, I want to do this full time. I don't want to be a teacher anymore. This is what drove me. This is what excites me to go do this. I said, man, you need to publish that story. And she did. And she started taking certification courses that, you know, in terms of security and technology. And she would make these handwritten diagrams and pictures that would help her study. And she was showing them to me. I go, why aren't you publishing those? She goes, what do you mean? I go, put them on social media. I says, because that does two things. First, it'll help others like you. It will help them on their journey. And second, it will give people insight to who you are, right? And what you're about. And the reason I said that was there was my first mentee through Syversity. He came here. He was a lawyer in Ethiopia. And I'll tell you this story why I thought it was important. He was a lawyer in Ethiopia, and he came here. He was doing the same thing. He was a lawyer. He was new to the United States. He wanted to get in cyber. He was doing these certifications and all that, and was giving him some guidance and offering him, you know, some lights of a path to follow. And he got an interview with Merck, the pharmaceutical company, right, for a cybersecurity job. And he was nervous, and we went through some of the things that he should cover. And I said, but don't forget about the human skills. It's important. He went to the interview. He came back. He goes, Bob, you're not going to believe what the 80% of the interview was about. I go, what? He was about me. They could care less about my technical certificate. They wanted to know 80% of me. I go, yeah, they want to know who you were. And they go, why do you think that? Why do you think they wanted to know that? Because you had to fit into their culture. If you're someone that doesn't align with the culture, they don't care how technical, inept you are, or what skills you have. It's not going to work, right? So, and that's why I told Avery, it says people need to get to know who you are. And by doing that, it worked. She got a job in cybersecurity from being a teacher. Same with the lawyer from Ethiopia. He had a job in Merck, in cybersecurity, Merck, a lawyer from Ethiopia. And that's why I'm adamant about, I just told one the other night, this law enforcement officer from Turks and Caicos, write your story up. He goes, really? I go, yeah. He was telling me the story about he transitioned into it and what he was doing. I go, people need to hear that because they want to know who you are, not just what you did, but who you are as a person and why you left being in law enforcement and why you want to take a broader journey into cybersecurity and what that means to you and why you could be an impact player. But people need to get to know who you are. And the only way to do that is write your story, tell people why. So.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to every story.
Yeah, she has, if you go to her profile, she has it out there published, I think.
Yeah.
And some of her pictures and diagrams, some study notes are out there too. It's fascinating. Yeah. The minute she did all that, it changed her whole world around.
Yeah, that's great. Dale?
Oh, Bob, we've had a very good conversation with you. And in fact, the first few words you said, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be a very good conversation. And yeah, it has turned out to be a very good one. So do you have any parting shots for us?
Do I?
Do you have any parting shots for us?
Yeah, I would just say, be patient. You know, everybody wants or is on this journey to get into cyber. Be patient. It will happen. Know your why. Define your why. Share your why. And just remember about the human skills. Don't forget about that. It is so important. It's just so important. And make sure that it drives you in what you're doing and that purpose, because that's what's going to get you into cyber, and people will see it and they'll recognize it. And that's the kind of people they want to work with. So know your why, define it, share it, develop those human skills, have empathy, have curiosity, you know, have communication skills. It's especially the empathy. It's so important. So important. You know, I was there's a lot of publications that I see on LinkedIn about leadership, right? As a leader, you should do this. You don't have to be a leader to do those things, right? Just help people. Help them be successful. You don't have to be a leader to do that. You can be a peer. You could be, maybe your boss. Help them. Why not? You don't have to be a leader to be able to do that. So those are my parting comments.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's been a wonderful talking to you, and it's been a pleasure to meet you a bit online, but it's been fantastic. So thank you for your time. Really appreciate
it. I hope it was worthwhile. Thank you.
Yes, it was. It was very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So our listeners and our audience in general, you could first of all like and subscribe the channel, and then also go out and watch our video with Olivia Rose, episode 18. This is out and it should be on the screen. Yeah. Other than that, have a good day.